Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So, let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We are coming live today on LinkedIn, Facebook, X, YouTube, of course. YouTube is where you can go and find all of the archives. This is episode number 100 and something of NIMSY Live. All of our old episodes are archived over on YouTube, completely free. You don't have to be a NIMSY member in order to take advantage of those, so I encourage you to go check those out. Without further ado, today we are diving deep into how artificial intelligence is reshaping multilingual communications, particularly within the public sector. We'll explore the evolving role of AI in real-time language interpretation and discuss the tangible drivers compelling organizations to adopt this technology, moving beyond the initial hype and into actual results. A key focus is going to be on the challenges and compromises faced by organizations when implementing AI solutions, especially concerning legal and information security roadblocks. We'll uncover how language AI is emerging as secure and effective middle ground, addressing critical concerns like data privacy, intellectual property, ownership, and regulatory compliance, even as the pace of AI innovation outstrips the development of new standards. Our guest today is Saul Leal, the visionary founder and CEO of One Meta. Saul's company is at the forefront of creating a more understanding world through advanced AI-driven technology and solutions. One Meta specializes in real-time over-the-phone interpretation, OPI, and other communication platforms like Verbum Call and Verbum for MS Teams. Their unique multi-tenant architecture ensures unparalleled security, data privacy, and HP ownership for each client, providing dedicated models and datasets for individual training. This approach, utilizing deterministic machine learning models, makes their solutions ideal for highly regulated industries such as healthcare and finance, where general AI may not meet security standards. Saul will share his insights on how One Meta is helping organizations overcome AI implementation hurdles by prioritizing security and compliance. Saul, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's a great honor, Tucker. That was definitely a mouthful as you were explaining that.
I hope I got it right. Anything I missed out?
No, you certainly did. I will summarize it in with our mission, but it's we create a more understanding world. And we started with dialects and transcription in 152 dialects with translation in real time, which is really hard to do because you only get one pass to get it right. So we started with transcription, interpretation on multiple nodes and platforms and models, how they say it now.
So, and it's always hard for me to ask questions to someone like you because I've had a lot of conversations behind the scenes with you. So my ADHD brain forgets what I've already asked about. So I'm going to try to cover everything today, but jump in if you have anything to add. I thought maybe a best way just to introduce. Now, this isn't a product placement advertisement for your product. There's some interesting topics I want to talk about today, but I think it's important to understand the context to understand exactly what One Meta does. So to that end, we have a very short video that I wanted to show here, and I'll just bring this up.
I'd like to introduce you to Verbum Call, a phone companion that speaks more than 140 languages without the need of an app or internet.
Hola amigo, ¿cómo estás? ¿Cómo te ha ido?
Hello friend, how are you? How have you been?
I'm doing well, how are you?
Estoy bien, ¿cómo estás?
Verbum Call translates your voice in real time with up to 95% accuracy in over 140 languages with easy integration, and it can handle technical or everyday conversations. It requires no app or the internet. Just add it to any phone call or call a local number. If you have a phone, then you can use this technology. Increase your customer retention and be truly inclusive to their needs. Speak to your customers in their language. Click the link below or visit onemeta.ai/verbumcall to learn more.
So in a nutshell, that's what the product does. It's over-the-phone interpretation that is really putting the power in the hands of the actual callers, the actual consumers, and over 140 languages, all AI-driven. So let's get this out of the – let's cover this right now in the beginning. AI can be seen as – a negative, I want to say, is particularly for the people that have been in our industry for a while, there's kind of the stigma against machine translation. It's not going to be accurate. There's going to be mistakes. It's not going to be human quality. What is your response to that with the advancements in AI and quality over the recent years?
Let's poke the elephant in the room immediately.
Yeah, let's
acknowledge it. And the reality is, as I always say, common sense is the less common of the senses. And as AI evolves with any disruption technology, it gets better through time. And does it have some challenges 2 weeks ago, a month ago, 3 years ago? Is it going to get better? Absolutely. Just as we get better and invent and create great processes, AI is going to do the same. So yes, it will get better. There are some challenges, and we just need to apply common sense where it needs to be implemented.
Well, and let's go to that implementation. You recently commissioned a report studying all of this, and I can bring up some slides later on. But really quickly, I think kind of the gist of this is you found through research that you've done that AI is – lots of companies want to implement AI, but they're being blocked, essentially. And it's because it's seen as high risk to implement across different departments, across different functions within organization. However, language is kind of the great compromise that a lot of organizations are saying, we can start implementing AI starting with language before we roll it out to other departments. Talk to me a little bit about that.
That is a fantastic insight. And yes, you provide really, really well, very pragmatic. So first we need to dismantle the concept of artificial intelligence. So and what artificial intelligence or types of artificial intelligence is, if there's an industry that knows artificial intelligence from the core, from decades and decades ago, is the translation interpretation world. We've been through it with machine learning, dictionaries, since nearly decades ago. I remember, 25, 30 years ago, basic concepts and algorithms of dictionaries were being implemented in the translation interpretation world. Google Translate, it's been over 20 years, and they use this artificial intelligence since the very beginning. So with that said, we have to be very specific. Why are these companies today having some challenges with artificial intelligence in terms of the implementation? It's very simple. First is the concept of lack of training. And when you put lack of training together with a generative model, so you have these large language models that are generative AI, and at the border of the training, these models exist to predict, and they're predicting on their circumstances or on their low training. And then that's where you get hallucination. So the whole thing, all the challenges that we're seeing, if any, it's especially on that hallucination, on that lack of training. Is it going to get better? Absolutely. Is it going to bring some risk today where people don't want to show in the front page of the New York Times because they mess it up? Yeah, there's some risk there. So double-clicking in this concept, there's a lot of AI councils. So we have CTOs, we have CEOs that have committed resources to implement AI and promise to their shareholders for some productivity and lower costs, increased margins. And the reality is that when you double click, when you start implementing, you find all these risks. So in many cases, the implementation doesn't happen. So now you have these, you know, frustrated stakeholders that want to achieve this, that have promised this you know, utopia in terms of productivity and increasing margins, but you can't really implement and harvest the fruits of artificial intelligence. Now,
right, it's you've got entire departments, you've got legal, you've got InfoSec, who's, it's their job to say no.
Correct. And now this is not a blank statement. I mean, this is definitely not a blanket statement. Once again, we need to have common sense, but that's a lot of what's been happening over the last year and a half. Now, comms language. This industry knows AI for decades. And when you go specifically on machine learning, that risk disappears. So now organizations are looking at language as a low-hanging fruit to prove the value of artificial intelligence within the organization, by cutting costs, by expanding the horizons. Companies more and more are going global. So having this language barrier to disappear, creating bridges, becomes a no-brainer, and it becomes a token of proof and credibility of an AI service in the company that will lead to others.
Right. It's basically getting your foot in the door, but it's allowing your stakeholders to get the AI into the door with kind of a low, I'm going to piss people off when I say this, but a low risk implementation when it comes to interpretation translation, so that they can have a proven use case and in the future deploy AI for other solutions. Am I summarizing that correctly?
That's correct. I mean, it's easier said than done. I mean, there's a lot more complexity. It's not complicated, it's just a little more complex, but that's exactly, you summarize extremely well.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that companies are really, they promised it to their stakeholders or the shareholders. Companies are, there's an appetite for implementing AI out there, whatever that might be. And we can have a whole conversation on, is that a good thing or a bad thing that we're just blindly wanting to implement AI without having actual use cases for? So let's leave that conversation to the side for now. The fact of the matter is, companies want to implement AI. And you've been talking to some big players out there. You have implementations with some big players out there. I'm not going to mention any names. I'll let you if you want to, because I don't know what I'm allowed to talk about. But what, in your experience, are the number one drivers? You mentioned reducing cost. That's a given, right? What are some of the other drivers for AI implementation desires?
There are several. In my world, in my industry, is not only lowering costs, but also increasing your revenue. I mean, those are anything that it's given, but I think the main one is increasing or maximizing the user experience.
Okay.
A lot of people don't talk about it, but under this whole concept of maximizing revenue, lowering costs, it is the user experience and providing at the core, what we share is connections. We are trading experiences. As we trade, that experience becomes the commodity of today's businesses. And that's really at the core.
So the user experience, and it's so funny, just because for those of us that have been in the language industry for decades, we've been so trained to say, well, machine translation isn't as good as human translation. Machine interpretation isn't as good as human interpretation. So therefore, if we implement AI, the user experience is going to decrease. What is your response to those lines of thought when you come across them?
It's relative. I mean, it's, once again, common sense. There are situations of where certain experiences will satisfy. And there are other situations where the same experience will not satisfy. So if I'm in a 911 phone call and I'm having over 600 millisecond delay, that's unacceptable. Mm. So that's not going to satisfy. If I'm in a Uber driver somewhere in Germany and I'm holding my phone and I'm talking through an app with the driver in two different languages and I have a 600 millisecond delay, that is amazing. That's like magic. So again, we have to look at it. As I always mentioned, double click, we have to allocate the context, like consider the context of the call. And in some situations, it's magnificent. I think that the most powerful thing that we're seeing is that organizations are increasing their communication. The language, if we were to put a pie, and we're seeing that the pie is increasing. As we're using AI, people feel more comfortable. There's no barrier of entry. Costs are more accessible and the pie is increasing. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a more connected world. And by naturally increasing the pie, that percentage of use cases where a human must be needed is increasing. The reality is that we don't have and we won't have enough humans to satisfy the need.
All right, and when you say humans, you're talking about linguists, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and it's kind of a chicken and the egg situation because the more AI is able to solve, the less attractive becoming a translator or interpreter is as a career path. And the less attractive it is as a career path, the fewer new translators and interpreters enter the field, and therefore the more there is a demand for AI. And combine that with what you also said, it's not just a proportion of the pie, it's that the pie is increasing, then the future needs this, essentially, right? Whether and regardless of what your thoughts are on the value of human interpretation or human translation, right?
Well, and by economics, the value will increase. It's always offer and demand. So the pie is increasing, the percentage may be increasing or staying the same or let's say decreasing, but as an absolute number is increasing, but the amount of linguists will remain the same, increase by a percentage. The reality is that the demand will surpass because the pie is getting so big, the offer of linguists and its offer and demand. So I am very optimistic that the need will continue to be there. There will be more use cases.
And so, I mean, a couple of those use cases, like you have, tell me about Verbum, right? There's several different ways that it's deployed, and I can try to bring up the website here. But we talked about over the phone. How does that work? And there, you also have a solution for MS Teams. So just walk me through that really quickly.
Sure. At the core, we have a ladder value of products. So we go from an SDK. So we do have SDK products that any developer can use and build any product they want. And we use our own SDK to build products. So some of our leading products, we have about six of those, but some of our leading products are the Verbum call. So I pick up the phone, no app, no internet. I'll call you from my carrier to your carrier, and I merge a call with an AI phone number, and an AI can actually detect the voices. It's a technical word, it's called diarization, but put a biometric variable on each voice, understand the language, and repeat it to you in the other language. So no app, no internet. You just make a phone call to a friend, can speak Spanish, and the other side will hear in English.
Well, and vice versa. And right there, not to interrupt, but right there, we've already solved a problem that has plagued service providers wanting to provide interpretation for years, for decades, which is someone comes into a doctor's office, an ER, right?
Yep.
Speaking a non-English language, What language are they speaking? I can't order an interpreter if I don't know what language they're speaking. So just that use case alone, AI to detect what language it is quite impressive, quite helpful.
Oh, it is, but that's one use case. But think of that, the whole experience around that use case. Think about a scheduling the appointment. Think about the insurance conversation in different languages. Think about the post appointment interaction. So it's not that isolated event that is huge by itself. In fact, that was one of the experiences that ignited to build this company. It was specifically in a hospital because there was no transcript. I was with family members that could only speak Spanish. We had an interpreter. I speak both languages, and I was noticing that the translation was quite the same. And I wanted a transcript, and there was no transcript because the interpreter can only translate, can only do one thing at a time.
Right.
So there's a lot of gaps in the experience, but that's how we live. It's kind of the water in the fish tank. There's no other option.
Right.
But now AI is giving us better experiences where we can actually connect better, understand better. And that's really at the core of the human experience.
Yeah, as you're talking, I'm curious. So this product, and we'll come back because you have other products I want to talk about, but I'm going to take us off on first of many tangents. Do you see it possible in a world, not today, maybe not even 5 years, but 10, 20, 30 years from now, whereas the responsibility of providing an interpretation shifts away from the service provider and onto the individual? What do I mean by that? I mean, right now, hospitals, just to use healthcare as an example, hospitals are required to provide interpretation for folks that have limited English proficiency and need interpretation. In 20 years from now, when everyone has an iPhone app, everyone has access to it online, will the hospitals even need to provide that anymore, or will people just have it as part of their daily life? Will it become the new fish water?
I do think that we're definitely going to that direction. I always believe that, once again, going back to that pie chart, there will be use cases where you do want to have the responsibility to make sure that understanding it's there. Let's say in the event that you're sharing some news about chronic illness, or there's some intelligence report that has to be done with very private environment, there are use cases that it will still require no technology and have humans interaction. So that will still exist, but we're definitely walking in that direction where it becomes a commodity more and more.
Yeah, thank you for that. So, and I took you away from talking about the products here. We're talking about Verbum Call, so that's just over the phone. Before we move on to other solutions and other areas that need interpreting, just a question about the call. What barriers are there to implementing an over-the-phone solution like this? Are there any regulatory bodies? Because when we're talking about telephone lines, we're talking about a regulated space, right? Are there any barriers to entry there that need to be overcome, or how do you see that space?
Oh, it's, I mean, we've been through it. So there are tons of barriers. It's not an easy space.
Right.
From a technology, I'll talk from a technology perspective, a user experience, and then regulatory. I'll try to go quick on those, and feel free to stop me any moment. Perfect. But on the technology side of things, you have a speed, accuracy, and security. On the speed, because it's real time, you need a lot of processing power and a lot of algorithms to actually get it under 300 milliseconds. The fact that we are about 125 milliseconds, about 1/8 of a second, it's very remarkable. that is, I will say, the first roadblock. We, as a company, we surpass it, but it has nothing to do with AI. You can solve it with GPUs, not 100%, but it's extremely expensive. It's actually not worth it. It becomes more expensive than having a human interpreter at one point.
Okay.
But you actually solve it on the architecture, on the transmission of protocols, on the internet itself. So it's a huge problem. It's a network problem. It's an infrastructure problem. So that's number one, is the speed. The second one is the accuracy. Is let me give you an example. We had a company in South America. They had a Colombian call center, and we put a Mexican dialect interpreter into the Colombian call center. And the accuracy was pretty good. It was like 95% was great. But then we put a Colombian interpreter, AI interpreter, into the Colombian call center, and the accuracy was like 99% on the, in some cases 100% on the transcription. It was, and 1% of accuracy, it's really expensive. So to get it from like 92, 95 to like 99, 100 on transcription, it was mind blowing. And that tells you the importance of dialects. And people are not really thinking of this. They think like English is English, and Portuguese is Portuguese, and Arabic is Arabic. Well, there are 18 types of Arabic.
Right. Well, and people that aren't language geeks, I mean, they're thinking Quechua is the same as Spanish, right?
Yeah, yes. Right. And you have 20 plus types of Spanish, and right, like 17, 18 types of English and dialect. You have Irish, Ghana, UK, South Africa, Indian. I mean, you have all these different colors of dialects and languages within languages. So accuracy is extremely important. We've solved that with data sets. So we build data sets at a language dialect level, and that has been transforming. Just as I share on the example for the Colombian call center, just using two dialects, you can see the delta of confidence level of the language, you know, pretty high. And the third one is security. And I think, well, I have come to realize that this was, again, one of those strike of logs, like we design things well, but we didn't know what we didn't know, how valuable the piece of security was going to be. So you have, let's say, the Coca-Colas of the world,
right,
and you have the Pepsis of the world, and they're both working with the same language model. Well, that's a big no-no. I mean,
right,
Coca-Cola is not going to train Pepsi, and with the same language model. So now you need to have different models and different data sets and different tenants and GPUs and clusters for every single client, and that's very expensive. Then the question is, who owns the data? And data can be encrypted, private. That's kind of a standard today, so that's really not a known issue. But it's about who owns the insights of the data. And that is like, if Peter is doing a financial transaction, you know, how many Peters do you need? Where do they live? Their socioeconomic status? That is the insights of the data that now the model knows. And what's the security of that, and who owns that? So that counts very critical, because no one is talking about that aspect of security. It's about the insights of the data. And something that we solve as we work with companies, we tell them, hey, not only the data is yours, the insights is yours. We will put our own data set on your own tenant, on your own compartmentalized cluster, and you can own that yourself forever. You leave our company, you'll have that data set. So that becomes extremely valuable to these companies as they're looking at security. So once again, on the technology side, we have speed, accuracy, and security. So those are the main three areas. On the customer experience, there's a lot there. But
well, first, before we get into that, I'm sorry, I'm just dying to ask, because you mentioned, you know, owning the data and owning the insights from that data. And that's something that I think this is something new that people aren't even thinking about, because they're thinking about, I want to own my data because for security reasons. I don't want it getting leaked. I don't want competitors to have access to my data. I don't want my data being used to train other people's models. And that's kind of where that thought process stops. But owning the insights from that data, like your tool provides sentiment analysis, for example, is something you haven't talked about yet, but super powerful tool. Rather than asking your customers, you know, stay on the line to fill out a brief survey about your call, you don't need to do that anymore because you have AI automatically detecting the sentiment analysis of the different calls. And it's an extremely powerful insight that you can get from that data. So not only is data, owning your data, important from a security standpoint, there's also a lot of things, probably a bunch that I can't even think of right now, that you can use that data for.
That is correct, Tucker. So touching quickly on the sentiment analysis, that is a very powerful tool that we create, and we're building other technologies. We're working on other technologies in that regard. We're working on a cultural analysis aspect. We're working on a comprehension index on the call. I call it time to understanding. When two people are talking and based on what they're saying, it locks on understanding. That is an incredible indicator of the customer experience, like how it's directing, where the conversation is going. You still need some quality control aspects. So quality control, quality assurance companies are still very, very valuable because they have decades of data and information. But going back to the core, the reality is that the whole customer experience is ultimately what leads. So you have the technology, and to your point, there's a lot that technology can provide. But everything points to the customer experience.
Yeah. I mean, I say this all of the time, which is, you know, different companies care about different things. One thing all companies care about is their customers, right? So it's kind of the universal, like, well, there are two things, customers and money, right?
Yeah.
Those things are related.
And the customers bring the financial resources, right?
Right. So, and I interrupted you, going on to the callers' user experience and the callers' concerns.
Yeah, there's a lot there. So personal identifiable information. So most of the companies, when you say your phone number, when you, your address, your start spelling words, AI breaks, you know, and these, you know, going back to the security aspect, a lot of companies are just wrapping technology that already exists and models. Well, the reality is that they're not looking at the security because they're not partitioned that model for every single client and every single experience and every single phone call. So you have, it's really non-secure, not at the data, but at the insight level. The insights are being shared with the company. So a lot of companies, they think, oh, I'll just provide an experience by wrapping a model that already exists. You know, OpenAI, Gemini, another Claude. The reality is that you can't. The reality is that when these companies are doing their due diligence, you may have a good, an okay or good customer experience, but now it goes back to the security. So this security piece is really relevant in today's world. Mm-hmm. Going back to the customer experience, personal identifiable information. Once again, the speed is extremely important, more than 300-400 milliseconds. Also providing different experiences, just like with language interpretation, you have consecutive interpretation, which is I speak, there's an interpretation, then you speak, there's an interpretation that's consecutive. We provide that technology, as you know, we saw on the video. There's other technologies like simultaneous interpretation. So we have that technology available today as well, where there's no third voice, there's no lag. As the agent is communicating, the other person is hearing their voice in any language. And as the other person is talking any language, the agent is consuming the content immediately as the words are being pronounced. almost with no delay. We call it near real time or immediate interpretation. So those aspects are really important. Are you interrupting the eye, not interrupting, you know, those nuances of training on both sides? And there's a lot there as this technology evolves. And the third aspect is the regulatory, right, Tucker. And that one is what we're learning. And sometimes it depends on the companies. But what I'm seeing is that some companies are extremely innovative. They're embracing this. Interesting enough, we're seeing a lot of innovation from the healthcare providers, which I always thought that healthcare would go slow, but healthcare is moving at a great capacity. They're extremely conscious. They are risk averse, but they know there's a space for that, and they understand disruption innovation. So they know the curves of disruption. They want to get on the wave early. So when the technology, it's at 100%, it will be 100%. And our technology is, it's there already. That's why they're jumping on it.
Well, it's too good. I mean, if I'm a procurement manager at a healthcare company, any company, really any government agency, and I hear that I can get real-time 95% accuracy AI-driven translation or interpretation, well, if I'm a procurement manager, I don't know the difference between translation and interpretation. It sounds really good. And that kind of brings us back. I want to circle back to talking about how language, using AI for language, is kind of a foothold for getting AI into an organization. You said there's a lot of companies out there that are super innovative. They really want to do this. They have an appetite for it. What are some of the blockers that they're coming up against? And I think I have a slide for that you sent me over. So I'll dig for that as you're talking here.
Yeah. Let me see it.
Business challenges, Facebook enterprise. No. Here, let me. Where's my button? Boom. All right. Highlights.
Yeah, this is actually a fascinating. Yeah. This is a great. I mean, I can't express how excited I am about this research. It's done by the Everest Group, and as similar to NIMSI, they do really interesting research, specifically on call centers. And that user experience. So it worked really well. They did about 100 companies, and you can see it at the beginning, from IKEA, Accenture, and others, BPOs, GSIs, and specific companies. Walmart was one of those. Yeah, you can see it there. So you have the Adidas, the Meta, the Microsoft, the World, the Citibanks, the Fujitsu, and then you get your service providers, your Accenture, Alorica, fantastic companies. So they start double clicking on like, what are the barriers? So you wanted to show that one, right? The barriers of entry?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the second to last, I think, slide. So go. Yeah.
I should be more prepared here.
One up, no, right there. Right there, that's the one. One up.
Right there, we go. Major barriers for enterprise while adopting AI-powered language.
Okay. This is a very, very interesting slide. It's actually, I will say, one of my two favorite slides. We can share the other one. But this one is, what are the main concerns of these companies? This is very specific to language interpretation solutions powered by artificial intelligence. So it's extremely niche, the question. And it's, what are the barriers? So the number one is IP ownership. It's this concept of insights, the security risk, and the data privacy. That's the number one concern. It kind of blew our mind that was what their mind, that's the main challenge that they're seeing. Because they know that now everything is owned by a digital entity, and a digital entity is processing data and creating insights and providing value. So you give that out, it's a chance. So that's the number one. The second one is, I really don't know not only the cost of AI, because people are realizing now that this whole token thing, every time that you upload something and every time that you download, it becomes really expensive very quick. Well, and then you start comparing.
There's expensive when it comes to the pricing structure for AI, and I've talked about this before, and I'm not an expert, but most people aren't experts. So what I think about it, I think is somewhat indicative of what other people are thinking about it, is A, it's expensive, sure, but B, I can't understand how expensive it is or why it's so expensive. It's this really obfuscated token pricing structure. One token costs X dollars. Cool. What is a token? Right? And I know clients, you know, I've been working in client services for years, and yes, they care about the price, but something they also care very much about is being able to forecast, being able to budget, and the predictability of the price. They want to know, okay, how much am I going to spend next quarter? Because they have to tell their boss how much they're going to spend next quarter. And if you have this really fuzzy token type model, it's kind of risky to adopt that.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's as risky as uncertain. Yes, maybe one is probably the other, honestly.
I agree.
We're just complimenting. But it's uncertain sometimes because you don't know what you don't know. And we never used this model before. So something that our company, One Meta, is doing, we actually put everything. We take all the tokenized business model and translate it to minutes of consumption. So a minute of consumption is about 120 words, 150 words per minute. Every word is 4.5 characters. And now you can equate characters to a token. A token, don't quote me on it, but it's a five by, it's about a word basically. So everything's on a token. Characters are based on a, tokens are based on a character. So now you can equate both two and create your equations. And we provide everything in terms of consumption of minutes. So that only that part has really helped Tucker to connect with companies, because we're not charging in tokens, we're charging in minutes, which is actually the same way as linguistics will charge.
Yeah.
So that has helped with that. Now, the next level is, can we SaaS? Can we actually create a model that I pay like the Netflix, $20 a month and consume all the content in the world? Well, there's more data that needs to go into that to get your average straight and provide the consumption. We're heading that direction as well.
I see at the bottom here, 3% say, and I apologize to the podcast listeners that you can't see this slide, but I'll try to describe it. 3% of respondents said that a major barrier to adopting AI language interpretation was that they were waiting for better solutions from mainstream vendors to hit the market. And this is only 3%. Which is interesting to me because, like, it's one of my top things. You know, I'm a business owner, and we have different solutions and software that we implement here. And I can't tell you over the last 3 to 5 years how many vendors we've offboarded. Why? Because Google comes out with something better or cheaper. Like we use Google for all of our email. We use G Suite. We're G Suite users. Google for Business, whatever it's called now. And we used to have a third party solution for meeting transcriptions. Right? Now we don't have that anymore because Google came out with the meeting transcription. We used to have a third party solution for a scheduling tool. Book time on our calendar. We used to get Calendly. Now we don't have that anymore because Google came out with their own solution. It's included in our package, right? And what do you say to this, right? Because is there a risk for you? And I can give my input on why I don't think it's that big of a risk or the niche that you would cover. But is there a risk that you have this solution, this beautiful solution that works? You have MS Teams integration. And then next week, Microsoft comes out with their own solution that's included in the Microsoft Teams package or O365 package.
Interesting. So maybe other companies, not necessarily Microsoft. We were part of the Microsoft startup group, and they did a lot of great partnership with us. Let's put it that way. We have collaborated immensely.
Nice.
But the foundational question is, can one of these mega companies or GA companies come and build it and you're out of business? We just saw OpenAI build on Apple a transcription tool for meetings. So all these companies now that have been building transcription tool for meetings over the last 2 years are now kind of out of business. The reason I say kind of is, number one, ultimately, it is your relationship with your customers. So that's number one. Can we maintain, can we get a barrier of entry based on the experience that we provide to our own customers? The second one is, how deep do you go into the use cases? So the deeper you go, the more difficult it will be for these large organizations to go and take it to your business. So
this is true. Like from my own experience, I mentioned we offboarded Calendly and we're using Google, whatever, Calendar, Book a Meeting. I don't know what the tool's called, right? Calendly was a lot better for our use cases, right? It had a lot more function. It was a better tool. It was just expensive, right? Google was free. Right. So I can foresee a situation where a company wouldn't want to use the out of the box solution. They want something that they have an account manager that they can call up and say, hey, I've got a new use case. Hey, I need a new integration built, whatever it may be.
So I will say that's the second one. And the third one is there was a time that in your example, Calendly did extremely well. Mm-hmm. And there's time that they probably saw it coming, they have to retire. So there's also that that timing of for how long we're going to play in the game, where is our strategy in the industry. So those three are important aspects in terms of barriers of entry.
Yeah. So, but regardless, I mean, the data doesn't lie. Only 3% of people are concerned about that. So I'm in the minority when I think I'm overanalyzing it.
The interesting thing about that specific one is, let's go to the next slide. Okay. And this is actually a very revelatory slide.
Yeah, talk me through this one.
No, actually, go to the one before.
Okay.
My bad. There it is, that one.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one.
This is the second one that I love the most. I mean, I love the whole research and feel free to contact, go to the website. We'll provide this research without to anyone that will like it. So, and we'll happy to do a presentation on it.
Yeah. But so, just anyone out there listening, just reach out to Saul afterwards. And he can make sure he'll take care of you.
Yeah. Go to info@onemeta.ai and use request for the research, and we'll provide it and. Happy to set up an appointment.
Awesome.
So let's go to that slide for a minute. So that slide is fascinating. So this question is, how ready are you to implement this technology, a specific language interpretation powered through AI? How ready are you? And this is a self-proclaimed stat, right? If we walk through it, the first one says, I'm prepared, but implementation is still planning on exploration phase. The second one is, I'm fully prepared and already implemented. The third one is, I'm fully prepared and ready for implementation. I'm not implementing, but I'm ready. Hmm. And the third one is, I'm not ready.
Okay.
93%. I mean, this is a crazy number. 92% of these companies are self-proclaiming that they're ready. They're either prepared or fully prepared.
And the other 7% are...
I mean, I never seen anything like this.
Right.
Where the CIOs, the CEOs, the presidents of they say, I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah.
92%. I mean, I can see like 20, 30, 40, 60%. But 93%, they're self-proclaiming, let's go.
And soon.
We're really at the crest of this opportunity. And OneMed is really leading on this.
Yeah.
If we go to the second question, is when would you like to implement? So, okay, 92% is ready. Awesome. Okay, great. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, let's get the sales team out there. But then how long will it take to implement it? Like, we're talking large corporations, right? We're talking about some of the largest corporations in the world that did this survey. And they're saying 75% within a year. It's like, what? 70%? I mean, again, these are self-proclaimed numbers.
Sure.
A lot of people think that they're very big, actually can execute. But it's still, my gosh, 75% are saying that in the next year, I will implement this. I mean, for these companies, the next year is like yesterday.
Yeah.
Look, because there's such a big organization, it's so much bureaucracy that next year it's like yesterday. We're doing this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen that level of urgency.
Yeah.
Now, what is more interesting is go back to this 92% is in the, it's 75% in the next year, 93% in the next 18 months. So there's a great appetite for AI language interpretation solutions in real time. And of course, there are other slides that talk about digital versus voice and the importance to have a common, both a hybrid approach.
Yeah.
You will see that go up a little bit more. That's more about the interpretation. This is the one.
Yeah, here it is.
And this one talks more, okay, do you want a voice only or do you want a digital only? Do you want to start with both? Or do you start with digital first and then voice? So, and we got the responses from the service providers and the enterprises. So, of course, the majority of the organizations, they want both.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're seeing. Now, we have seen all stages of this specifically. We thought that digital was not going to be as needed. We thought that other companies were providing this, but we're saying that they want both, and they want both products from the same company. So the data sets are the same. They're not sharing data sets. So going back, I mean, everything points back to the architecture and the security, because they're saying, I don't want to have five companies to provide these services of interpretation, and I want like one that provides them all.
And so you work directly with enterprises. You don't work through any LSPs, correct? Or do you have like white labeling solutions or partners in the LSP space?
We have white labeling solutions for sure. In fact, one of our largest clients, we did a press release last year. It's a NICE CXone. We're OEM with them. And so we do OEM white label solutions.
Okay.
And these are massive organizations that they're implementing at all levels. So they can have in all the value ladder of products, you can get an SDK or you can get a white label product like Verbal Meetings and so on.
Okay. No, I was just curious about that if you only worked with enterprises. I'm just watching the clock here. We're almost out of time. I know, right? Time flies when you're having fun. We can do it again. we can do it again.
Let's do it again.
It costs me nothing to schedule these. I wanted to ask you, like, what advice, tips, sage words of wisdom do you have for the traditional company service providers out there, the language lines of the world, the interpretation companies, the translation companies that have been around for years and years and years. And you know, I get it. I'm kind of asking you to give advice to your competitors here, but would you tell them you need to adopt AI? Would you tell them there's always going to be a niche for what you're doing now? What do you say?
I respect the industry. I admire the industry. I feel a little bit inadequate to provide any advice to organizations that has been before me for decades. I will point in the principles of disruption innovation, and that is to embrace, to have faith that a collaboration will make the pie bigger, the demand higher, and the quality of the offer better. If there's an advice or an insight, I don't think advice is the right word, at least I don't feel adequate, but an insight will be work on this, on these collaborations. We provide SDKs. We can really enlarge, increase the industry, not by two, three, but by a lot more. And that collaboration with the technology, with the experience, with the account management that they have developed over decades, could really provide great value, not only to their shareholders, to our shareholders, but to the industry and to the individuals that were not able to communicate before. And now because of this technology, there's new conversations that will not have happened otherwise. Creating that new level of conversations, it happens only when we all work together. So in that aspect, I'm very, very collaborative with everyone in the industry. We want to really create a more understanding world.
Can I just say how refreshing it is to talk to a tech founder that actually has a degree of humility?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'm doing my best.
No, that's awesome. And no, Deb, it was a joke, other tech founders out there. It was just a joke. So thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate you taking time for this. Like I mentioned, we can do this again anytime. Like, it's always
an honor
to you.
It was delightful. I can't believe it's been an hour, honestly.
As time flies when you're having fun. So reach out to Saul. info.onemeta.ai is the place to go. If you reach out to them, they can share. They have this beautiful PowerPoint deck with all sorts of insight. I found it super useful. Any closing words before I take us out, Saul?
No, looking forward for next time, Tucker. It will be a great honor.
All right, thank you, sir. I'll take us out. Ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this episode of NIMSY Live, then join us next time by going to our LinkedIn page, clicking on the events, and signing up to join us live next time. If you're watching us as a recording on YouTube, on LinkedIn, on X, on anything, welcome. Join us live sometime. Engage in the chat. I appreciate our guest today, Saul Leal. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I get to have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.